Tango Tango Papa 1998, August 31st, 2017.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from northern Pennsylvania. I don't know, it might be considered northeastern Pennsylvania, along Interstate 81, about, 25 miles south of Binghamton, New York. I'm unloading late tomorrow morning in Kirkwood, New York. So I stopped here. There's a Flying J truck stop here. I don't remember the name of the little town. There's some little town near here. A lot of little towns in Pennsylvania. But it's along Interstate 81, and it's about 21 miles actually from where the load delivers, and I'm pretty sure I've been to the place before. So I could have either stopped here where I did, or I could have stopped there's a couple of truck stops in Binghamton. There's a TA truck stop that's been there for years that, you know, doesn't really have all that much truck parking. And then there's also a Love's truck stop that's actually newer than the TA, but still been there several years. And it doesn't have really all that much parking either, and so I decided I would just go ahead and stop here. There's a Denny's that I could eat at, and it's only 21 miles, so that's what I did. So when I recorded the last podcast, I was at Schertz, Texas. And I think I was kind of waiting to find out what was going to happen. They had basically kind of forced me into swapping this load with this other driver. Because I had an empty trailer and he had this load that was delivering to, it was two drops and it was supposed to deliver to Houston. But of course, Houston was really severely impacted because of the rain caused by Hurricane Harvey. Hurricane Harvey didn't actually hit Houston, but Houston nonetheless got, about 51 inches of rain, kind of depending where it was at. But they got a ton of rain, and then worst flooding ever. And, of course, Houston is a city that's kind of known for its flooding events from time to time. And it's like the worst flooding ever that they've ever experienced. And so what ended up happening, they ended up, I ended up swapping back with the driver that brought the load, because really, they should have never had him swap to start with, the way it worked. He should have, I think probably what happened, they probably had him take that to Dallas, I'm assuming. And then, then the thing would be delivered whenever it could be. Because there were all kinds of closed roads, it would have been impossible to get into Houston, let alone try to deliver the loads. And the places probably weren't even open because, people couldn't even get to work. They ended up swapping back. And so I ended up back with my empty trailer, and the guy that had the load originally ended up with the same load. And, so it's kind of a long story, but, you know, and it's one of those things that probably should have never happened in the first place, but oh well. I guess it got straightened out in the end. And I probably should have kind of put my foot down and told them no whenever they were trying to finagle me into doing it. But oh well. Lesson learned. So anyway, I ended up picking a load up at China Grove, Texas. That's there's an old Doobie Brothers song about China Grove, Texas. So that's kind of a little suburb of San Antonio area. So I picked a load up there, and then that load delivers, as I say, in the morning, late tomorrow morning at Kirkwood, New York. And, you know, so we'll see what happens after that. So anyway, it's kind of actually kind of chilly here. I'm going to end up actually having to run a little bit of heat, I think. Because I can't, let me see if I can see what the temperature, what does that say? 50-something, 56? Yeah, it says 56. Looking at the truck thermometer, and it's probably pretty accurate because I've been here for several hours now, and that's kind of allowed that sensor to cool down, because it's usually, if the truck engine is warmer, the sun's shining, where I don't know where the sensor's at, but if the truck engine's warm particularly, then the thing will not be accurate unless the truck is moving. And then, you know, if the truck's moving, it's usually accurate. But everything's cooled down at this point, and so it's saying about 56 degrees, and I think that's probably about right. So it would seem that, you know, certainly no air conditioner is going to be required tonight. So, as I said, you know, you know, it would have been impossible to go to Houston. That would have been a pretty much an impossible thing, yet, you know, at the time. Now, I don't know if there, even now, I don't know, there may be some loads starting to go back in there. There was a thing from my company, you know, they put out this, like, a weekly video update that they send through the Qualcomm, and guy that did the update was saying that there were 17 drivers. Basically, he said they were impacted by the Houston hurricane, and he really wasn't clear. He kind of, the way he said it at first, it made me think that there might have been 17 drivers, company drivers, that would have been there in the Houston area. But then the way he ended it, he said that he kind of indicated that those 17 drivers lived in the Houston area, and the companies tried to get a hold of them to, you know, kind of see what their status is or whatever. And some of them, they haven't been able to get a hold of. And so I guess they're still trying. So I don't know if there were probably some drivers, I would think, that would be in the area that may have gotten trapped there. And or, you know, there are people that live in Houston that, you know, that drive for the company. So I'm not, you know, like I say, it really wasn't clear the way he was talking about it. So, don't know. But anyhow, I have been, since this happened, I've been watching, or actually listening to, as I'm driving. I'm not watching it, but I'm listening to it. As of right now, they're still on. KHOU is a television station in Houston. I don't know if what they might be a CBS affiliate. I'm not sure, but it's a TV station, and they've had this live broadcast, which they've got a live stream up on YouTube, like 24/7, where they're you know, kind of updating constantly. You know, it's just like it's sort of like, you know, they've cut away from their regular programming, and that's so. And then they're, kind of switching around and talking to different reporters in different parts of town, and they're showing different things. And so I've been listening to that, especially while I'm driving. You just, of course, with YouTube, with the app, like on a phone or a tablet, you can simply start it playing and then turn the screen off, and the audio continues to play. It doesn't use as much data either as the video does if you have the screen turned on. But if you have it turned off, then you just get the audio, and that plays actually pretty well. And it's really pretty remarkable the way the people of that region, and I think it's probably more or less a Texas type of thing, but certainly, the example is the Houston area that we have right now, how those people are helping each other. And that really, they're demonstrating what America, through this tragedy, they're demonstrating what America should be. It's really pretty remarkable. You've got people of all races and nationalities, etc., 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 and they're in the process of helping each other. You know, kind of rescuing people from neighborhoods and, if they can, bringing food and helping their neighbors kind of clear out their houses now after the, a lot of them have been able to get back to their flooded houses. And, they're starting to clean up. And so they're all helping each other. And it's really quite a remarkable thing. And they're sort of demonstrating what America really, what the ideals are. And it's not all about groups and being angry at whatever. This is sort of a more or less, you can call it, a storm like that is just an act of God. And it's not going to do you any good to rage at get all upset with the weather. That's silly. Stuff happens and you deal with it. And these people are dealing with it. They're not waiting. They're not waiting around for someone to come save them or whatever. I'm sure there probably were a few that did that. But in fact, there was actually, I didn't really look at that, but there were these two women. I was listening to it. There were these two women that a boat rescued them from a flooding neighborhood. I think this happened yesterday. And they were saying, well, they told us to go up here to the edge of the road, and there would be some vehicle here that would have a big Texas star on it, and they would take us to wherever we needed to go. And so in the meantime, they went up there and they didn't see a vehicle that had a big Texas star on it, but they had other people that came along. They said, they called them other civilians, that offered them help, offered them a ride, and they said, no, we're waiting for the official thing. So here they were offered help. I'm sure the people that offered them a ride, asked them, do you need a ride? Because they were standing on the road and they had probably had a backpack or garbage sack of stuff that they'd took out with them, on the boat from the neighborhood. And here they were, and people were offering them, do you need some help? They'll give you a ride. Oh, no, we'll wait for the official thing. And so they were complaining that the official thing never came. And yet, here these people offered them the whole time. They were being offered what they needed, and they refused it because it wasn't the official thing, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But most of the people are, they're just helping each other. And it's really a heartening thing. It's a remarkable thing. If there is anything that good can be, that can be said to come out of this disaster, really, it is that. It is demonstrating to the rest of America what the American spirit really is. It's not about race. It's not about being jealous of each other. It's not about who's rich or who's poor, but it's about people helping each other. And it's, you know, so I've been listening to that, and I think it's, the last time I checked, the live stream was still up. The TV station has yet to, return to their regular programming. So, you know, as long as that's up, I'll probably continue to listen to it. But, you know, here is an example. This is what we're supposed to be. This is what America really is supposed to be. And it's not about being jealous, and it's not about being petty and, you know, he has more than I do, or she has more than I do, or this group is better than I am, or blah, 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 blah. You know, get over it. And the other remarkable thing is most of these people weren't even all that emotional. They were just right there, and they're, you know, well, got to pick, you know, got to start cleaning up, or got to help. Here it is. Let's just do it. Get it over with. Let's not dwell on how horrible this is, or how sorry we are for ourselves, or feel sorry for me. Let's feel sorry for ourselves. That doesn't cut it. So, really a remarkable thing. And I'm sure that goes on in other, you know, other parts of the country and other disasters, but I don't think anything like that, you know, the degree of it that's going on in Houston, Texas, you know, has happened anywhere else. So, really a remarkable thing. So, anyway, I've got some voice files that I'm going to play, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to play first. I've actually got to, I haven't yet copied them to the computer, so I'm going to do that now. And so, be right back. Okay, so I've copied them to the computer, a couple of files from Jeremy. So here is Jeremy.
Hey, Tom, Jeremy here, commuting to work again. Back from vacation and back to the daily grind. So hopefully you're safe out there. Just wanted to check in and see how things are going. I actually was listening to you talk about Tesla again. And just thinking about like general efficiencies and things like that of not just the battery technology and the storage technology, solar collection technology, but also the autonomy, is that a word? Autonomy of the vehicles. There's so a couple of things. Just the first one is just around efficiency. I think in general, I would tend to go along with what your current inclination is, which is the efficiency is just not there to make it a practical selection unless you have the money to burn on a pleasure vehicle, which is what it amounts to because of the range efficiency. If you can afford to live, you know, 10 minutes from work, great. Where I live, that's a luxury, and it's something that most families already can't afford. So if you have extra money to burn on housing that's within that sort of daily range or practical range where you wouldn't have to plug into a supercharger after you got to work, I commute probably about 120 miles round trip each day, which, yes, that's within range, but, you know, it doesn't leave much to chance as far as, you know, if I were sitting, you know, I know that the car doesn't idle, so I don't have to worry about that, but I'm just saying, like, if I had to take an extra, like, if I had to run errands or if I had to, like, take an extra detour to get around something, you know, I feel like I'd be pushing the edges of what would be practical. At least for the base model vehicle that I could actually consider something I would afford. The other thing is that just efficiency, though, with, you know, just the way that technology works. Solar efficiency, yes, I guess you are limited by the laws of physics, and I guess with anything, you're limited by the laws of physics, but somehow we seem to be able to continue to miniaturize things and continue to get more power out of them. So I think that the efficiency of solar collection is one of those things that stands to now that there is a push toward green and renewable energy. I'm with you that, you know, the clamoring for a whole bevy of electric vehicles on the highway being seen as some crazy benefit that doesn't require us to then further rely on fossil fuels to produce that energy is somewhat of a lark, and it's kind of ignorant. So unless we have a bunch of brand new nuclear power plants coming online that I don't know about, then we're just kind of we're making the problem bigger than it already is and just putting a big green label on it so people can feel better about themselves, which is I know that's what most of this is about, but you know, when it comes to subsidies and things like that, I think that the idea is just to kind of keep the price low for now, and when it becomes less of a novelty, you know, and it's clear that this is going to be more of a luxury product and not a niche, you know, affordable everyday family kind of product, that's going to go away. So, you know, I think if we continue to miniaturize, and I think about things like, you know, storage, like hard drives used to cost thousands of dollars, and now you can go down and get, you know, a nice solid state hard drive for like $50. These are things that, not necessarily apples to apples, but the idea is that you continue to improve efficiency and increase capacity and things like that. That's going to be the next push, is for batteries themselves, you know, make them more efficient, use different materials, you know, explore other material energy technologies. That's going to be where the breakthrough happens. It's not going to be with, you know, the current technologies that are out there. This is more or less just a proof of concept still, in my opinion. We're just seeing if electric cars work at all along with other vehicles. And the reality is that electric cars won't be more than just a novelty until they're forced upon us. And people don't want that right now. Now, in Europe, it's a different story. In my travels to Europe this year, I noticed that most cars, at least the service vehicles that we rode in, which were, you know, the taxis and the Ubers, that those were already hybrid cars. Now, part of what's driving that is the restrictions around how much it costs to bring your vehicle, say, into central London, because they have zones there where if you're a service vehicle, you can enter that zone, but if you're a hybrid, you know, have 1 fee. Whereas somebody who wants to just drive a regular fuel vehicle has to, you know, pay a different consideration. So everybody sort of has their own fee that they have to pay to get into different parts of the city. And if you're an Uber driver, you know, you want to pay the least, and that usually means working over a little bit extra for a hybrid vehicle. And that means, you know, less smog in the cities, theoretically, anyway. So that's their thing, is that they want to have vehicles that shut off instead of idle while they're sitting around. And traffic is a huge problem there, as you can imagine. So it seems to work for them, as far as there are a lot of hybrid vehicles. And if you go to Paris, you know, there are a lot of scooters and motorbikes there. And they're very annoying, and the drivers are very presumptuous and frankly, you know, jerks. But, you know, that's a cultural thing, and it's something that they consider, you know, more of a, I'm willing to sacrifice some convenience or, you know, some extra money in order to have this hybrid vehicle because I'm, you know, doing my part, whatever you want to call it. I think it's just a function of a more socialistic society where people just assume that they have to give up more of what they own in order to play a role in society. But
okay, well, let me go ahead and interrupt before I forget what I wanted to, you know, my reactions, what I wanted to say. So the last thing you were talking about is the French, you know, and I don't know. they, you know, each country kind of has its own sort of, it's sort of like a cult-like personality. You know, overall, you can kind of ascribe to the, especially the French, there's this image that they're sort of arrogant and they've sort of, you know, the image I have, just the impression that I have, and not actually knowing any French people, but just the impression that I've gotten through them, you know, of them through media of various types, is that they, you know, they believe that their language is beautiful, the way they say the words is beautiful, and almost like you have to worship us because we have such a beautiful language. We have such a beautiful culture. You have to, you know, you should worship us. We're superior to you. Almost, you know. And that's basically true of every culture to a large extent. You know, and I was talking to the, ended up having a conversation yesterday. There was a couple of I was sitting at this counter eating, and there was a couple of they were actually black truck drivers, and they were talking, and the one guy had been in the military for, you know, he had retired from the military after, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, you know, and then he had actually retired, and then he'd gotten bored and bought a truck and came back to work. So, and then this other guy was a younger, but both of them were black, this other one was younger. But in any case, I was talking to them, and, you know, I was kind of explaining to them how the, you know, sort of the cult-like behavior works. You get up, you know, you have a group of people that you know, and I use the example of the, like, the labor union type thing, where they're all upset, pissed off because they have to work, gotta work, you know, and the boss is, you know, whatever, and then, you know, they resent management and what have you. And so they develop this whole identity around being upset, you know, that's basically, it's about being upset that they have to work. And then you have the agitator that comes in and agitates, and then kind of gets, the more they can agitate them emotionally, the more mob-like their behavior becomes. And so the guy started, the younger guy started quoting me the dictionary definition of a cult. And, you know, unfortunately, I really didn't have a whole lot of time to kind of continue the discussion. But so I basically told him, you know, I'm kind of defining a cult loosely, and it's not just strictly Webster's dictionary definition of, you know, that's connected with a religion. Because, you know, a cult, the root word of culture is cult. You know, ever... people ever stop to think about that? The root word of culture is cult. And so you end up with a sort of a cult-like behavior, and they all sort of take on the same personality. It happened in Hitler Germany. And to a certain extent, the Germans still have a sort of a cult-like... there's this image of what German people are like. You know, and then we got the same way with the Mexican culture. You know, we've got this image of what Mexican people are like. And, you know, this image of what Chinese people are like and what Japanese people are like, etc., etc. Korean people are like, etc. You know, Orientals are like, or Indians from India are like, etc. Or Russians are another one. And so... anyway, I was having that discussion with them, and so it's hard to say if I got, you know, at best with a discussion like that, you can get somebody to think a little bit, but, you know, the discussion didn't really go anywhere. It was kind of cut short because everybody had to kind of go on about our business, and it was a very friendly discussion. It wasn't you know, contentious at all. It was a very friendly, interesting kind of discussion. You know, those are the kinds of discussions that I like to have, because then, you know, people are thoughtful, and even if they don't agree, you know, they'll still listen to your point of view. And, you know, and those are the kind of discussions that you can end up kind of, even if you don't necessarily agree with the other person's viewpoints, you can end up kind of taking it'll end up spurring further thought. So, but in any case, the French, I can see how they could, you know, they would be like that, just from what I know of them through the media, and, you know, so that's one thing. But now, the Tesla thing, there is no way, you know, I know they're coming up, well, we're going to have a Tesla semi, or, you know, and I think... one of the regular trucking companies has already beat them to the punch. Might have been Freightliner or one of them, Kenworth or one of them, came out with, here's our electric city truck, you know, and they sort of displayed that, I don't know, a day or two ago. So, you know, and this Tesla truck, this so-called Tesla semi, the rumor is it's only going to have 300 miles worth of range. Now, that might be fine if, you know, if it's a city delivery thing, you know, and the company wants to pay the, you know, the extra money for whatever and have the electric, the battery-operated vehicle for their delivery van or whatever, you know, and it's got a 300-mile range. Well, more power to them. It's going to, you know, it's probably going to be more expensive. But, you know, in the city, I can understand, hey, let's try to reduce emissions. There's really nothing wrong with that, you know, trying to reduce the emissions. You know, that's a good thing. You don't, you know, because you do have a concentration of people, and you have all this exhaust, and all you have to do is look at a city, you know, like Denver, Colorado, or particularly anywhere in Southern California, you know, and you can look up in the, you know, because Southern California is just naturally foggy anyway most of the time. A lot of California is, and you get in Southern California, and if there's no wind, as there typically, sometimes there is, but most of the time there isn't because of the mountains, the way, you know, the way Los Angeles, or the whole greater Los Angeles area, Southern California is situated, those mountains don't let the air, you know, so you get the trapped air, and then you see this, you know, the fog becomes kind of smoky, and then therefore you get smog, and it's kind of ugly looking, you know. So I can understand, you know, you could have some vehicles that, you know, if it works, fine, but it will not work for over-the-road trucking, and I'm going to tell you why. Right here where I'm at is a great example. This truck stop probably has 250 trucks, okay? There's probably 250 trucks parked in here right now, at least. Now, if every one of those trucks, just imagine the electricity that it would take for every one of these trucks to... have to be plugged in, and they, you know, and you'd have to have a gigantic battery for a truck, you know, and at 300 miles for an over-the-road truck ain't gonna cut it. Sorry. You know, you gotta go a whole lot more than that. You gotta have, you know, probably 1,000 miles of range, and then you've got to be able to, you know, fill that back up within 30 minutes or so. Can you imagine the electricity that would take? You know, and then plus all the infrastructure. You know, if you had every truck spot, parking spot had to have a plug-in that you could plug the, you know, massive plug-in and plug in, you know, have all this juice flowing. Each truck stop would have to have its own nuclear power plant. You know, because I guarantee you the local power company would never be able to supply that. This just ain't going to happen. So a lot of this is just, you know, total pie in the sky. And then the other point I wanted to make is the, and I may have made it in the last podcast, but I'm going to make it again. The autonomous driving thing is not happening. I don't care what Elon Musk says or these people try to come out and say, oh, we've already seen it in action or whatever. It ain't happening. And it's gotten, there's some articles now, it's gotten pretty clear that what Elon Musk has been saying, that, oh, it's, we have it, and for the last year, for the better part of the last year, they've actually been selling a $3,000 package that was supposedly going to enable full autonomy whenever Tesla flipped the switch. They flipped the software switch, and you're going to have full autonomy. And he's been flat out lying about that. That does not exist. He was using that as sort of leverage over his programmers to get them to face, hey, we've got this deadline, we're gonna get these people to get the absolute best out of them, the most we possibly can, to get them to meet this deadline. And that's a common tactic in so-called Silicon Valley. You know, it's a common tactic to kind of, you know, put out an artificial thing like that and basically vaporware and to try to pressure the employees into creating the impossible, to do the impossible thing. Sometimes it works, but in this case it hasn't. Tesla has gone through, and there are the people that are working on the autonomous, so-called autonomous vehicle project, the software. A lot of them have quit. They've come and gone. They've gone through a bunch of people. You know, some of them were, supposedly, big thing. You know, guy was only there for 6 months. I don't remember what his name was. He was a great hire when they were talking about it at first. All these people these Tesla podcasts I listened to, they were all talking about how wonderful this guy is and what a good hire he was, blah, 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 blah. He was gone within 6 months. You know, and Elon Musk even recently said, oh, well, we're still, by the end of the year, we're going to have a car that's going to drive from coast to coast and without human intervention. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. You know, so, and even the, you know, sometime back GM was talking about, we're going to have a super cruise control. You know, and the way they were describing it, the car would just, you'd start this super, so-called super cruise control and set the speed and it would, you could just sit back and it would automatically change lanes for you and keep you going on and what have you until it ran out of gas. It's, supposedly it's going to come on some new Cadillac shortly. And it's not like that at all. It's more like what Tesla has. And you have to keep your hands on the steering wheel. And I don't know that it's going to automatically change lanes for you. You're probably going to have to initiate it. So this autonomous driving thing is not going to happen. There's too many variables. There are just too many variables. So, but a lot of it is just hype. And the thing, I don't know, it's interesting, because there's actually a cult, and they talk about it all the time, sort of a cult-like following that Elon Musk has and Tesla. And there's, different cult-like followings. Why is it? Hollywood is another one. They all kind of think alike. They groupthink. Why is it that the public tends to want to give these people their attention? Why is it that the public tends to want to be part of the cult? To give attention to the cult? Why is it that of course we watch movies and TV shows and what have you. And that's all really basically a lot of it, you know, it's kind of worshiping the cult leader to a certain extent. You know, it's really, really kind of a strange, you know, and I think, of course, the reason, I can tell you what the reason is. I sort of asked that rhetorically, but I know what the reason is. The reason that we need these, you know, distractions and what have you, the reason that those are so appealing to us is because it sort of takes us away from ourselves. It sort of diverts our own attention away from basically our own guilty consciences. You know, could you, what would happen if you didn't have the diversions? What would happen if you had to, you know, just, if you didn't have any diversions, if the diversions went away? You know, that's the question. You know, most people would say, well, they would, you know, sometimes people say they would welcome that or whatever. Would you really? If you didn't have any diversions, would you be able to, you know, how long could you go? You know, and of course, the ultimate example of that is someone that's, you know, that's like they're locked in jail in solitary confinement. And a lot of them, it drives them crazy. They can't handle it. You know, and of course, the biologists or, you know, or psychologists or whatever, they'll say, well, humans are social animals. We need human contact, blah, 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 blah. Sorry, not true. Obviously, human, you know, we do need other people, but not necessarily for that. Because, you know, in other words, what they're saying, they're trying to normalize distraction. What are you being distracted from? You're being distracted from your creator. Because overall, if you're just kind of left alone, however that happens, or you deliberately do it, you deliberately sort of kind of create your own space, you know, the compulsions and it's, you know, so on and so forth will wear off. And you don't need, you know, but of course we go for the distraction because the distractions sort of help us renew it. It's kind of like the people that go to a bar to, you know, they all, you know, cry in their beer and, you know, find someone else that's worse than they are and then they don't feel so bad. And of course, ultimately, we should, regardless of whether we're with people, other people or not, or whatever we're doing, we should have that space. We should be able to carry, you know, God is not in a church. You know, he's not in a, it's not some somebody up in the sky somewhere. He's right here with us. And it's not an emotional thing. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people want to think it's an emotional thing and you should, you know, make some kind of an emotional thing. It's not. I'm sorry. If you think it's an emotional thing, you're mistaken. My opinion. My opinion. You're deluded if you think it's an, you know, if, you know, God is, and being saved is somehow, it's an emotional thing. It's not. It's the opposite. God takes the emotions away. So anyway, I've got completely off the... I've managed to get completely off the subject there. But anyway, so let's go ahead. I could keep on talking the entire podcast. So let's go ahead and get back to the rest of Jeremy's comment here. So here's Jeremy once again.
I still think it's disingenuous in many cases. But as far as the technology for autonomy, you know, part of me is also skeptical, but part of me also thinks that the reason that it hasn't been stomped into the dirt already is I'm working on this premise of artificial intelligence that the government already has, and some of the things that we see with the robots and these DARPA challenges and things like that. You know, I'm also kind of operating on the assumption that we do with air travel, or, you know, just technology like military technology, that if you think about how far advanced the vehicles are that we know about versus the classified ones. And I just feel like, you know, this is the government just kind of stepping back and saying, all right, well, we already have all this stuff. We already have autonomous vehicles. We already have these things that the general public doesn't know about. And this is kind of our way of slow rolling this so that, you know, it's in other words, there's nothing new. It's not like, you know, Elon Musk coming out and saying, hey, we have these autonomous trucks that can deliver things. I assume that if this is something that the consumer market is now hearing about and experiencing at the sort of proof of concept level, that the government has been doing it for, you know, 15, 20 years, and that they're not worried about it at all. So if these sensors, and I don't know that Elon is working with the U.S. government or whatever, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of collaboration with DARPA, and, you know, some kind of, or maybe vice versa, you know, maybe Elon is helping advance the research on his end, and that's a function of the government subsidies that he continues to receive.
Okay, well, let me interrupt once again. You know, I know, you know, that the government probably has some, you know, maybe technologies or weapons or something that the public doesn't know about. You know, there's always that possibility. You know, but I don't think they have really high, super high technology that they just haven't told us about or whatever. You know, even though there are people that think that, you know, and you can go all the way to the people that think that, you know, the military's already been to the moon and Mars, and they just didn't tell us about it, blah, blah, blah. So, which I, you know, I don't believe that at all. But where the real problem is, you know, I know Elon Musk, you know, he's talking about AI, and it could be bad, and, you know, they're thinking about the Terminator type thing, and that's really not the problem. You know, the AI, you know, you're not going to have to worry about the AI itself, whatever it is. And the machine is never going to become self-aware. I'm skeptical of that. I do not see that happening. You can program it and make it look like it's self-aware or whatever, but it's not. It's just a bunch of electrons, you know, kind of dancing in the, you know, to the pattern that the programmer programs. And that's all it ever is, and it's all it ever can be. You know, and you can get increasingly clever instruction sets that, you know, to make the electrons dance. But it's not self-aware. So the real danger, you want to know what the real danger is? It's people. It's the people themselves. It's us. We're the danger. Because let's say that we lose control of our country, and then we all end up having the cult of personality, let's say that formed around Saddam Hussein or around Adolf Hitler. Let's say we have a cult of personality, and so we have the, you know, developing the technology just like the Germans did. Except we've got really high technology now. So we develop machines that go around killing people. And they've been portrayed in movies, and of course, like you have the Terminator movie itself, you know, it's the machine that's malicious or whatever and that's trying to wipe out humanity. No, the machine is just the machine, but you can, you know, it's whatever you program the machine to do, whatever the instruction set is. And so then you couple the really malicious programs with really terrible weapons, then you got a problem. Then you have a problem. You got a big problem, and that's why in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, and I know a lot of people try to claim they understand what it says or whatever, or, you know, and they try to apply it to this thing or that thing. But one of the things it says basically is if God didn't shorten those days, you know, talking about the last days, if God didn't shorten those days, there would be no human being left. So in other words, human beings, we have a, you know, it's almost like we've got a, if you think of it as a malware, you know, of the mind. Starting with the Adam and Eve story. The potential for malware, it went from one generation to the next. So you have the whole concept of being born in sin. Think of it, you know, kind of think of it in malware terms. Passing, you know, being passed from one generation to the next to the next. You know, and of course we have to be saved from it. But if the universe has perfect order, the one thing that doesn't is human beings. Because, you know, in order to create free will, as I've explained many times, we as human beings, we have to, we either would, if God would have created us with the instincts to just follow him, you know, whatever he said, and just follow whatever the basic pattern that he wanted, then we would be like little wind-up dolls. You know, you pull a string and it says, I love you, I love you, I love you. God wants volunteers. He wants volunteer human beings, not conscripts. So in order to be able to create that, he created human beings with this flaw. You could look at it as a gift, or it's actually kind of a gift or a flaw, where we don't have to follow what we know is right. We all know, you know, unless there's something wrong with us, you know, and you're a sociopath, we all know what right and wrong is. Vast majority of us know what right and wrong is. We don't follow it, but we know what it is. But we don't have to. We don't have to follow it. We're not compelled to. We have to want it, you know, and that's a mystery as to why some people want it and some people don't. But you know, to really know the truth, to come back to our Creator. But there's this flaw. And so if you imagine that the universe is just perfect order, but there's a single flaw in it, that's why we're so well isolated on this little tiny speck of dust compared to the universe, is, you know, we're less than a speck of dust, this Earth that we're on. And we're very, very, very well isolated from the rest of the universe, because I really believe that we would destroy the universe if given a chance. Not only would we destroy ourselves, we'd destroy the universe if we could. If we, you know, if the flaw would kind of unravel the fabric of the universe. So we're pretty well isolated. So anyhow, let's get back to Jeremy's comment, because I could go on and on and on, and can't do that. So here's Jeremy once again.
That there's some kind of partnership going on there, where the government is basically just supplementing their own research that they've already done, and that they're at such a point right now where they're comfortable with these cars being on the roads here, because they already know what to expect from them, because they've already tested them in a war platform, and they found them to be pretty reliable, and these sensors are, you know, they're reliable. And you know, obviously it might not be the case. I could be dead wrong about it, but you know, it's part of me just wonders that maybe that's why we haven't heard as much squawking as we have from the federal government, is because they already know it's not a big deal. You know, we've already tested these platforms and we already know that they're reliable and they work. And AI is coming, so this is just kind of our toe in the water when it comes to the society accepting it. And that's another take I was thinking about the other day and wanted to share with you. You know, I think that the platform that you brought up for the platform idea of the convoy stuff, where the lead driver is a human and the cars following are autonomous, sort of in tow, that to me does also seem really impractical, because, you know, the A to B thing is just, it defeats the purpose. And so I think that unless you have something that is truly autonomous, you sort of lose the efficiency aspect of it, and it makes it less practical, unless you're talking about, you know, coast-to-coast superhighway kind of a thing. But to your point, you know, that already exists in the form of rail. Now, we can't have trains everywhere, and there maybe possibly are more efficient ways of doing things if gasoline was not a consideration. But you would still have a lot of sort of changing cabs. You know, you would have to have these stations where you have tractors that are already charged, which means a lot more way stations and a lot more, at least initially, you know, until you get rid of the idea of the truck stop, a lot more places where you have to have like a conveyor or a transfer system for containers to be lifted from one platform to another, so that the one that's fully charged can take over and continue on. In my head, you know, I have these, I imagine, just this kind of like moving track where these, like a conveyor where they automatically move side by side, and, you know, these rollers take over and they sort of transfer over, almost like a way station, where the trailers can just be side by side and the container can just roll from one to the other without much help. And the new tractor can just take off, and you almost don't even miss a beat. And if that was all computerized, it could theoretically be pretty efficient. But I think we're probably, you know, 15, 20 years away from that. And so is that a lot of time? Well, not really. I mean, if you think about it, it's not that far away. But I think as far as what we're talking about today, where people acceptance is the issue, it's not really, is it possible? I think we know it's possible in some form. Is it safe? And would it be accepted are the main questions, because I have no doubt that we could just say, hey, take this truck and send it coast to coast and, you know, try not to have any incidents. Well, I mean, one way you could approach that is just to make sure that, you know, every self-driving vehicle is badged and painted a certain way so that everybody recognizes, hey, this thing doesn't have a driver, so use caution around it, and assume that, if something does happen, that company is going to get their pants sued off of it. It's not like everybody on the road should now all of a sudden have to assume the risk of driving alongside an autonomous truck, and all the liability is gone. So, there's going to be a huge insurance issue, a huge litigation issue if there is any kind of incident. Tesla's already dealing with that with some of the self-driving car vehicle accidents. So, but I think, in a majority of these issues that we found, whether with its the Waymo cars from Google or the Tesla vehicles, that we found that there is, either somebody not following laws and as a result somebody getting hurt, or very few of them are actually related to the car itself, the autonomous vehicle, being at fault. So, and on top of all that, if you've got somebody who's in autopilot versus self-driving or whatever, I think there's two modes for Tesla vehicles, where you have sort of the self-driving, fully AI integration, versus the I'm on the interstate and I want to take my hands off the wheel or relax or sit back. It's almost like a more of a cruise control kind of approach to it, that there's going to be a different level of liability for something like that, where somebody had their hands off the wheel when they shouldn't have, because if the version that they are that they're driving is not truly autonomous. So I think it's going to be a bit of a slow roll, but I think it's coming, just because, I'm telling you, if it were available, like a Google car, that was affordable or available, I honestly don't care how dumb it looks. I would jump at it, because I lose 3.5 to 4 hours a day on the interstate driving alongside of a bunch of idiots. And I would love to be able to just sit back and, I already assume a certain amount of risk just by being on the road with these people. And I almost want it to be worth it, to the point where I either want to sleep so I can get some of my own time back, or I want to do work while I'm in the car so that I don't have to be in the office as long as I am. And so commuting is a huge reality for most people, at least in these metropolitan areas like the one where I live. So self-driving cars are going to be very well accepted in areas like mine, because people are open to any kind of improvement when it comes to these commuting conditions. So I would be very open to the idea that if there was an option out there where I could, just kind of sit back in the seat and sleep, I would be willing to trust a platform like that, whereas somebody else who lives 10 minutes from work is going to look at it very skeptically, or who does not drive around very much, is going to be, not willing to assume that risk. Whereas, I would definitely take that on as a risk, because I already have to drive alongside of a bunch of people who, it feels frankly like every day, like there are thousands of people trying to kill me on the interstate. So that's the reality of life, in, at least in my area, in the DC metro area. And so I feel like that would actually relieve some of the pressure to be able to have my hands off the wheel and just assume that if there's going to be somebody at fault, it's not going to be me and it's not going to be my car. So for me, the risk factor doesn't change, other than now I get some of my time back, and time is very valuable. So I think that's going to be a sentiment that's felt by a lot of people. Not quite there yet, but I think that if it was affordable, practical, and truly autonomous, and I think that's the key, is, the true autonomy has to be really proven before people are going to accept it. But, like I said earlier, I kind of suspect that this is being allowed to happen because the government already knows that it's possible and that it's efficient and that it's safe. And so whether to what level they're sharing that technology with the car manufacturers, I'm not sure. But I feel like there's probably some kind of partnership there, and that there's probably some level of technology and secret sharing there that we're not aware of. So I'll leave it at that, and hopefully you're all right there out on the road, Tom. But thanks for keeping this conversation going. Thanks for keeping the podcast alive. I definitely appreciate it every time you make an episode available. I'm right in there listening. So take care. Stay safe.
Okay, well, thank you once again, Jeremy, for an interesting perspective. So, to a certain extent, you know, if you want to call it artificial intelligence, of course, that's the new buzzword. It's really just software. It's not intelligent. And it's not is it artificial? What makes it artificial? You know, I know they're trying to put those two words together, artificial intelligence, like it's some kind of Terminator or something. Or something, you know, it's just software is all it is. And is software artificial? Well, no, it's, I don't. what's artificial about it? So, but be that as it may, whatever we call it. We already have it in planes. The planes are already highly automated. You know, and they can take off, they can land. Of course, they have to have a pilot there. It's actually two pilots. If it's a commercial, they've got to have the pilot and the co-pilot on every flight, as far as I know. So. But those planes are already highly, highly automated. There's even been talk, well, maybe eventually we can just do away with the pilots and the planes, the computer just flies it, and it's just all going to happen automatically. So, but it exists in the air. Now, how can that be? It's because the variables, once the plane is up in the air, the number of variables is actually vastly reduced. So then you've got a really more of a, you know, an air, you know, you think of the plane in the sky, it's really much more of a controlled, like a railroad-like situation where you've got control. Here are all the known variables, and nothing can really too much can interfere with that. Of course, there's always things that can interfere with it, but you know, like a bird strike or you know, a storm popping up, or you know, the downbursts, wind shear type of thing. All of those things can happen, but generally speaking, the thing is already kind of they can take off by itself and it can land itself. Now, I don't know how often the pilots actually use those functions. They do use the autopilot once the thing's up in the air. They're, you know, the plane's pretty much flying itself unless something happens and the pilot has to assume control. So that kind of works in the air because there's you know, the variables are sort of taken out of it to a large extent. But in the real world, on the ground, in traffic, all kinds of things can happen, and the roads aren't all perfect. There are plenty of places where there are no pavement markings. You know, you go through these construction zones where they've diverted the lanes. And, you know, a human being, it can be kind of hard for a human being to kind of tell where the lanes are. Usually we can tell, you know, we do a remarkable job, actually, of telling where the lanes are. But, and even if there are no lane markings at all, we can still kind of tell where our lane is. You know, where to, you know, to avoid hitting the other traffic. Computers have a really difficult time with that. because it, you know, they're just going off this instruction set. So, you know, and even if you try to make that instruction set really sophisticated, sort of if this then that type of stuff, you try to really make that increasingly sophisticated, it still has a hard time in the real world. And that's why you know, if you listen to these Tesla podcasts, there's a couple of them I listen to. One's called Talking Tesla. The other one that I listen to, well, there's actually three. One's called Ride the Lightning. And then there's another one called the Tesla Podcast or something like that. I can't remember right now. So there's three of them that I listen to. And so, the Talking Tesla guys, all, there's three of them, that three people that host that, and they all have Teslas. You know, and two of them have Teslas that have autopilot, and the newer version of it, and it's not working very well, and they're complaining. You know, the thing, they want to believe, you know, they paid for the extra $3,000 to get the autonomy, the vaporware autonomy that doesn't exist. You know, and they don't have it yet, and it's been almost a year. You know, so they paid $3,000 basically for nothing. But the part that they do have, the sort of the super cruise control part, they do have that, and it's not working very well. It's not even working as good as the so-called version 1 was, that was using the Mobileye. And of course, after that accident in Florida where the guy got his head chopped off, then Tesla dropped Mobileye, and I think that was a big mistake on Tesla's part. Because the Mobileye system actually works pretty good. It's not perfect, obviously. The guy got his head chopped off. But when it ran underneath the truck that it never noticed, that it didn't see, quote-unquote, that it failed to detect, crossing the road, that was, you know, crossing, you know, making a turn on across the four-lane road. The guy had the thing set at 75 miles an hour, and so the rumor was that he was watching a Harry Potter DVD. He wasn't, obviously, even if he, whether he was or he wasn't paying attention. He was distracted somehow, and he got his head chopped off. And so after that, Tesla dropped Mobileye, and we're going to develop our own software. And so these guys are complaining in this Talking Tesla podcast. They're complaining that the thing, they try to use it, and it wants to kind of bounce in its own lane, and it gets too close to the barrier walls, and it gets too close to the other cars, and they have to take control. And they want it to work. They want it to be autonomous. They want it to, you know, and say, you know, and these guys are supposedly very intelligent people, and yet here they are with the software that is basically, if they let it go, it would probably kill them. There'd be a good chance that they'd be in an accident at freeway speeds in Southern California. Trying to rely on software. So, but I think, you know, it can, you know, sooner or later, the super cruise control thing can happen. You know, I do think that could happen, but the full autonomy where there's no steering wheel, and you just tell it, you know, I want to go from here to wherever, and it just is sort of like the Johnny Cab and whatever movie that was, I don't see that happening and certainly not in my lifetime. I really don't see that happening because there's just too many variables in the real world. You know, and driving a vehicle seems like such a simple thing, but it's really, we fail to appreciate that it's really complicated. really quite a complicated maneuver. It's really a complicated thing. So, but anyway, it I just don't, I'm really skeptical about it. I don't see it happening, and you know, as far as the, you know, anytime soon. And then as far as the so-called artificial intelligence, you know, there are people that want to believe that that the computer is somehow it's gonna magically, it's kind of like a cargo cult. You know, remember what a cargo cult is. Cargo cult, I think it was during World War II, there was this some cult on a, you know, these natives, these backwards natives on some island somewhere in the South Pacific. You know, the planes were dropping cargo on, you know, for, I guess, for war support or something. And so this cargo cult basically is this group of people that after that they were, you know, they were backwards natives, and they were kind of building almost like a mock airport with a mock airport tower out of bamboo, you know, to kind of draw the gods into dropping cargo on them, and then they'd have their free cargo from the sky. So the modern version of the cargo cult is sort of like the Ray Kurzweil thing, where, you know, they think that you know, you get to a certain level of processing with the computer. It has a certain number of transistors, and it's got the right software. It's got the magic right software. And somehow consciousness arises out of that. That's silly. That's a cargo cult mentality. That's like thinking that if you do these things, that it's just going to magically, you know, something's going to magically happen. It's along the lines of people thinking that, you know, back in the 1800s and 1700s and, you know, that, you know, or 1600s, that life arose. All you had to do if you wanted mice would be to, you know, just kind of put some trash in the corner, and the, you know, and that the mice would arise from, that life would arise from that. You'd have these complex organisms that would arise from basically what would be trash. And of course they proved that wasn't true, because you can put the trash, you know, take whatever trash you want, organic or not, it could just be wadded up pieces of paper and seal them up in a jar, and it, all it, you're ever going to have is the trash sealed up in a jar. Sorry, you're not going to, mice aren't going to arise from that, rats aren't going to arise from that, and consciousness is not going to arise from having the adequate number of artificial neurons, you know, kind of computer simulated neurons. It ain't going to happen. Sorry. I hate to break the bubble. Ain't going to happen. That's magic. You want to talk about magical thinking? There you go. That's magical thinking. With all the technology that we have, you know, human beings are very clever. Clever creatures. We're not going to be able to create consciousness. The only, you know, from, with our technology. Now, you want to create consciousness? Have kids. You know, there's your way. You know, you want to create, you procreate. And then you get, you create these little beings that have consciousness. They're called children. You know, have fallen human beings, backwards human beings, people that see the world backwards, want to people that want to play God want to kind of create their own little artificial world. And they, you know, believing that they can create their own little creation. That will probably worship at their feet, they're hoping. It's weird. You know, kind of create the HAL 9000 out of the 2001 A Space Odyssey, kind of create the HAL 9000, and then it worships you because you're God. You created it. You brought it into existence. You brought the consciousness into existence. So I'm very skeptical. I don't see that happening. Sorry. Ain't happening. Yeah, you want to create a really sophisticated calculator? Have at it. I mean, you know, we can, you know, calculators can calculate, do math things way faster than we can if we get it programmed right. You know, it can just, you can, you know, bang out math all day long. Have different instruction sets, and boy, it can execute it quick. But as far as consciousness, ain't there. Sorry. So I think, in large part, I think the term artificial intelligence is simply it's a marketing term, and it's kind of a con to kind of get people to, you know, sort of like smoke and mirrors, to sort of get people to give them something else, I guess, to divert their attention, or give people something else to worship or to fear. You know, the machine's going to take over. No, it's not. Not unless, you know, it's all about, as I was saying before, it's all about, you know, where you better fear. Want to be afraid of something is what the maliciousness that's in your own heart. The maliciousness, the malware that's in our own minds. Because that is a bottomless pit. You want to know where the beast comes from, that's where it comes from. Comes from, you know, sort of in the form of a mob and the groupthink. Watch out. So anyway, better be bringing this to a close. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.